Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Oh, with that music playing, you know it means one thing. Our friend Ray Fittipaldo from the Post-Gazette joins us now. Ray, brought to you by LGKG Injury Lawyers, 7 locations in the Pittsburgh region. They'll take your personal injury case personally, lgkg.com. Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good morning, Josh. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us. All things go well in the Fittipaldo home for Christmas, I hope.
Absolutely. My kids were up at 6:30, so we got to spend Christmas morning together before I departed for the stadium. So, yeah, everything worked out okay.
That sounds like one hell of a busy day for you. If you were doing presents at 6:30 off to the Steelers-Chiefs game, that sounds like a jam-packed day for sure.
And it was, and Josh, on top of it, as you know, it was quite the locker room afterward as well. A lot of Steelers in there, not really in a Christmas mood after that debacle.
Yeah, not festive, I'm guessing, for sure. Let's start right there, Ray. You hear guys say that, you know, guys need to want it more. There's 10 guys doing a job, but one isn't. Is there a specific player, maybe a couple of players that are being kind of put under the microscope or, you know, thrown under the bus, if you will, here? Yeah. Or is it just a collective of, you know, one guy messes up, it seems like, every play? Is that kind of what we're looking at here?
Yeah, Josh, I think it's probably somewhere in between that. I don't think it's just one player, but, you know, if you want to sit down and look at the film and then look at who's talking and who's not talking, you could, you know, get pretty close to having a complete, mm-hmm. you know, jigsaw puzzle when it's all said and done. So, you know, Cam Sutton looked like he left Travis Kelce all alone for that touchdown. No one within 5 yards of him. And then after the game, Patrick Queen pretty much came out and spelled out that Minkah Fitzpatrick didn't get the check in time to get Xavier Worthy in the flat on the first touchdown. So I think we have a pretty good idea of what's going on. And, you know, the bottom line is, Josh, there's really two games to clean this up. You got one regular season finale where you would like to go in to the postseason on a high note, and then it's one and done after that. And if you don't get this straightened out, you know, the Steelers aren't going to be around the playoffs for very long.
Why does it feel, Ray, like late in seasons, and you know, you go back to the 2020 year, they start 11-0, and then you get to December, and it all, we see these breakdowns defensively. Why is it late in seasons in particular that we're seeing this team struggle with communication issues?
You know, this year, it's a little bit harder for me to understand. Last year, if you remember, Josh, just injuries all over the place.
Right.
They were playing guys off the street in the playoffs. Miles Jack, he was the part owner of a hockey team in Texas, and he started that Bills playoff game. So, you know, this year, yeah, they're banged up. I mean, I'm not going to deny that. During this three-game losing streak, they had a bunch of guys who were out of the lineup, but they are starting to get healthier. And, you know, Joey Porter really was the only guy who was missing from that defense, you know, on Wednesday. So, you know, I think part of this is teams figure out the Steelers as the season goes on. Those teams adjust, and I think the Steelers, whether it's stubbornness or it's an inability to adjust and break tendencies or show people new things, they just think what they're doing is good enough, and they don't really account for that. So I think – I don't know if Deshaun Elliott or Patrick Queen said it after the game, but basically I think it was Deshaun. He came out and said, you know, the Chiefs made the adjustments they were supposed to make, and we didn't make the adjustments. So once again, it's, you know, it's being spelled out for you there, and, you know, it's up to the fans and to the media to sort of parse through the words and kind of try to figure out what's going on.
Ray, when you look at Minkah Fitzpatrick, obviously he is a guy that's, you know, kind of under the microscope right now when you hear comments like this come out. And obviously, you know, he gets beat by Xavier Worthy for the touchdown. Going back to that Eagles game, Tom Brady on the broadcast talked a lot about how, you know, with Elliott out, they were moving Minkah up and playing him at the line more. And look, he made a play against the Ravens, came away with an interception. But we are seeing them get beat over the middle of the field more and more. Is that a result of Minkah moving around more? And why are they choosing now to have him sort of play a different form of his position than what they did in the first, you know, 12, 13 weeks of the season?
Yeah, well, you know, with Sean Elliott back, I think you were going to see everyone kind of get back to their natural positions, you know, within that defense. So when Deshaun was out, they did have to juggle some things, you know, and come up with some ways to be an effective defense. And that obviously wasn't good enough against the Eagles or the Ravens. We'll see what happens, you know, going back, you know, into the regular season finale, you know, against the Bengals. But Josh, it's not just these three games. They were terrible against the Bengals as well. You know,
right.
there were blown coverages in that snowstorm in Cleveland where they had chances to get off the field, guys wide open. I forget, what was it? Was it 4th and 5? And I think Jerry Jeudy was wide open.
Yep.
And, you know, Jameis Winston hit him for that huge first down in that football game. So it's not just during the losing streak. This defense really has been struggling since the bye. And, you know, you look at the payroll, you look at the guys who have all pros and Pro Bowls on their resumes. I think there's a lot to work with there, but you know, I think Cam Hayward and those guys are right. If one guy doesn't do their job, if one guy is undisciplined or trying to do too much or just flat out misses an assignment, it affects the whole defense. And I think we're seeing that week in and week out.
Has Cam Sutton been an upgrade over Beanie Bishop? I thought Bishop gave them some splash early in the year, and I see Sutton getting burned and not providing the splash. I mean, they made that change, it seems like, and it hasn't really paid off. Do they maybe go back to Bishop at this point? I mean, how are they going to handle that position?
No, that's a good point, Josh. You know, Beanie came up with the big interceptions against the Jets, and I think everyone realized when Sutton comes back, he's going to have a reduced role because Sutton has a long resume in this league. And the thing that they like about Sutton that Bishop doesn't have at this point in his career is that versatility.
Yeah.
You know, Beanie only plays in the slot. Cam Sutton plays in the slot. He could play outside. He could also drop back and play safety. Now, you could argue it's not going well. He's not, you know, there's not much of an upgrade there with Sutton. But if they would bring Beanie Bishop back and insert him into his old role, you would lose some of that versatility. But as you sit here and try to figure out what Mike Tomlin is talking about in terms of personnel changes, to me, that's one of the two that could be made. Bishop for Sutton, play Bishop more like you did early in the season. And also, I think this is a no-brainer. You play Jaylen Warren the bulk of the snaps at running back and let him go.
Obviously, you hit the nail on the head there. It's the next thing I wanted to ask you about. I mean, we've seen Warren get more and more carries. How much of that is just him working his way back from an unhealthy start of the year? And are you at a situation now where you just really diminish Najee Harris's role? I mean, there was a play in that game where they ran that running back screen to Harris, and he just could not turn and get downfield, Ray. And I'm thinking, if you run that play with Warren, it might be a touchdown. Yep. And instead they ran it with Harris, and it ended up getting blown up. And I don't know. I just – not that Harris is a liability right now, but Warren just seems the far superior player.
And why would you do that? Warren is your third down back. He's by far your best pass catcher. Why would you bring Harris in for Warren in that situation? It's almost like you're trying to outthink them and out-scheme them there. And it was just that was a bad personnel move. Jalen Warren's yards per carry are not what they were his first couple of years in the league. But honestly, I attribute that to, the offensive line being young and really not being very good in the second half of the season. But Josh, if you look at his yards per catch, career high 8.2, he's explosive. And I would argue after George Pickens, I think he is the most dangerous player among the skill guys on this offense. I just think he has to be in the game more. Yeah, you feed him the ball as a running back, but I would just have him in there all the time because he's a great outlet when things go bad for you in the passing game. Just dump it off to him and see if he can make a play for you.
Ray, obviously they get a nice little break here before their next game, whether that's 10 or 11 days, whatever it might be. How do they handle that last game, do you think? Is there a possibility that maybe they decide to, sit Cam Hayward, sit George Pickens, sit T.J. Watt? You have a chance to win the division, but you know that you're playing the following week, regardless, home or away. Could they maybe decide to rest some starters against Cincinnati?
Yeah, I mean, Josh, that's a tough call. Here's the thing, if you want to look ahead towards the playoffs, if they win, if they beat the Bengals, they are going to Houston to play a Houston Texas team that arguably is in as bad a shape as the Steelers are at this point of the season. So, if you do rest guys and you lose that game, then you're in danger of going to the Ravens or to the Bills. And I just think the way they're playing right now, Josh, I think it's about a 5 or 10% chance that they go into either of those places and win. So I would play everyone. I would try to get that game against the Texans in Houston and then see if you can get on a little bit of a roll. That's what I would do. At this point, you're counting on the Browns to beat the Ravens. You pretty much know you're going to be on the road in the playoffs. You might as well start with the team you think you might be able to beat.
Ray, the quarterback situation going forward, it's never, I guess, too early to start looking ahead to next year for the quarterback position. What are they going to do there? Is it as simple as you give Russell Wilson what he wants? Do they have to find sort of a low-end compromise for them? How does Justin Fields factor into this? And when you look at 2025, how do you see the Steeler quarterback situation playing out to begin the year?
Yeah, I think shortly after the season's over, they'll let the dust settle. And I think, within a few weeks or a month, I think they'll put a contract offer out there for Russell. They'll see if he takes it. And then if he doesn't, then you have Justin Fields to fall back on before free agency starts. The way I look at it, Josh, and let's see how the season ends. Russell Wilson could get hot and they could win a playoff game and, we'd all have, different opinions about the situation. But, he likes it in Pittsburgh. I think his family likes it here in Pittsburgh. And really, if you're Russell Wilson, do you want to start over at age 36, 37 where you have a pretty good situation here? So I'm not saying the Steelers are going to lowball him, but, can they get him for $30 million a year instead of, say, 35 or 40 million? I think that's what it's going to be. And, I don't think Russell is a huge problem with this offense during this three-game losing streak. He has some ill-timed turnovers, but he's also been in a situation where he knows the Steelers' defense isn't right, and I think there's pressure on him to score more. And I think that's why you're seeing some of the, not carelessness, but trying to push the ball down the field and taking some chances that he really wasn't taking earlier in the season.
Would they be looking at 2 years with Wilson on an extension, 3 years? I mean, obviously you're talking about a guy getting, well into his mid-30s and then late-30s by the end of any deal. What would that look like for them? I mean, could they pull off a one-year deal, or would Wilson – I'm assuming Wilson would probably want something with a little bit of term on it.
Yeah, listen, I think they can go like 3 years – $100 million, $110 million, and then make that last year of the contract something there where the cap hit isn't something that would kill you if you do have to cut them when he's 39 or 40 years old. So there's ways to structure those contracts. Omar Khan is really good at doing that. And I was just looking, you know, this morning at their cap situation. If I remember correctly, you know, they're going to be like 55, 60 million under the cap when the season ends. And they're going to have some options to even trim that a little bit more. So the money's going to be there for Russ. You probably do TJ too. We'll see about Pickens and some of the others. But the point is they're going to have plenty of money, you know, under their salary cap to get things done once it comes time for that.
With that money, Ray, could they go out and try to find another wide receiver, you know, whether it's, well, you know, 20 to 30 million? I mean, could they do that with the money that they have, or because of what they have to give, you know, Wilson and so on, will that sort of take that out of the equation for them?
Yeah, that's the balancing act. You know, T. Higgins has kind of thrown flares out there. Maybe he wants to come to Pittsburgh. But I think first and foremost, the Steelers have to figure out, can they fix George Pickens and can they count on him if they sign him to a long-term deal? And, you know, we saw some of the lapses in judgment or in effort on Wednesday. You know, everyone's saying, and I think it's true, that, you know, he was partly responsible for that interception that Justin Reed had, because he didn't run his route.
Right.
So it's going to be a constant thing of, can you keep him in the right frame of mind? That's actually what I'm writing about for Sunday. I think the Steelers have to count on receivers coach Zach Azani, Arthur Smith. They got to be part coach, part psychologist this week and for the remainder of the season. Get him back to where he's this productive player for you. And if they could do that, I think they got a chance. I mean, I think, listen, Josh, Calvin Austin has come on. I think he's a good number three receiver right now. Pat Freiermuth has been good in the red zone. I think they could target him more. They're still lacking a true number two. But my point is, when George is right, you got Austin, you got Freiermuth, maybe somebody else steps up. You know, I think you could possibly beat a team like the Texans in the playoffs, but I think they would have to commit to coming out and throwing the ball. And I don't think they've really made that commitment since the first Bengals game. So maybe they have to go back and do what they did a month ago when they scored their season high in points with 44.
Ray, appreciate you taking the time. Good to talk to you. Enjoy maybe a little bit of a break here before that Bengals game. And yeah, appreciate you hopping on with us this afternoon.
Thanks, Josh. Happy New Year.
All right, you too. Thanks, Ray. All right, that is Ray Fittipaldo. Brought to you by LGKG Injury Lawyers, 7 locations in the Pittsburgh region. They'll take your personal injury case personally, LGKG.com. He makes a great point about the cap situation next year. The Steelers right now have about $54 million open in cap space, but Preston Smith is owed $13.5 million. He has zero money owed in the dead cap if he's cut pre-June 1. So you get rid of him, that puts you in the $65 to $70 million in cap space. You look at some other guys as well, like Larry Ogunjobi is a guy who has a $10 million, $10.5 million cap hit. You would save about $7 million if you get rid of Ogunjobi. He's a nice player for them, but I think if they can address the line for cheaper than that, maybe they do on that defensive line. You know, you would hate to lose out on a guy that appears to play the run at times pretty well, but, you know, you could really open up some cap space for yourself here with the move of Smith. If you maybe get rid of a guy like Ogunjobi and you start going down the list of potential, you know, cap casualties, obviously Preston Smith is a guy that's not going to be back, especially at that number. He just hasn't really done anything to warrant what he has. Cordarrelle Patterson is a guy you could save, you know, $2.5 million right there by dumping Cordarrelle Patterson. You know, Cameron Johnson is a guy that, you know, they brought in at punter. I think they probably bring him back if he's healthy, but if he's not after that tough injury, you save money there. Dean Lowry, you could save $2.5 million there. So you start going down the list and you look at a Steelers team next year that right now, $54 million in cap space, but that could very, very quickly get up above $70 million in cap space. Well, you know, some of that has to go to the quarterback situation. You're going to need to sign really three quarterbacks to this roster for next year because all of those guys are done at the end of this season. And then after that, you kind of, you know, you see where you're at from a numbers standpoint. You know that at some point you have to pay George Pickens here. I mean, I suppose you know that. You have to pay a receiver of some sort coming in, and you probably need to go get a number two of some kind as well. You know, the good thing is Omar Khan does seem to be very good at that side of things, finding and you know the loopholes, if you will, the cap guru that he is known as. So I trust him in that regard probably more than I trust him when it comes to other GM responsibilities. Not that I'm casting him down the river or anything like that at this point, but I do think that Omar Khan has the ability to manipulate the cap better than most, and so I'm hopeful in that regard that they can really clear up a hefty amount of cap space here and kind of not retool completely, but certainly add to this team in the areas where they're missing out. By the way, another really good cap casualty here for the Steelers. Casualty is maybe a bad word, but Cole Holcomb, you know, the injury that he suffered, not a factor. He's owed $7.5 million. That drops down to a 1.6 dead cap number for next year. So you could save yourself some good money there as well. And then you're talking up over $80 million potentially open in cap space for the 2025 season for the Steelers. Let's get your thoughts, 412-928-9370. We got to get to our six-pack as well. We've been blowing that off, not intentionally, but we will get to the six-pack here in the show, and then we have Nick Costos coming up. So we'll take your calls, then we'll get to the six-pack starting at noon, and then it'll be time for Nick Costos to join us as well. Good to have you alongside. I'm Josh Rountree. I'm in for Pomp and Joe this afternoon on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Pomp and Joe Show, Josh Rountree sitting in for the guys here this afternoon. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock when the PM team takes over. Thanks again to Ray Fittipaldo for joining us. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Let's go out to the phone lines again, 412-928-9370. Let's go to Seth in Long Island next on The Fan. What's up, Seth?
Hey, Josh. How you doing, man?
Good.
Happy New Year.
You too.
Hey, so thank you, man. So, yeah, my biggest challenge is, watching Russ play and all this. And I got to tell you, I said this earlier, I don't think he's the man. And I'm kind of disappointed that they swapped from him to, from Fields to him. I think going forward, I mean, why can't anybody work with Fields to help improve his accuracy? Because he brings a completely different level and skill set to the position. So I'm hoping that, Tomlin always covets a running, a mobile quarterback. Why can't we make it work with Justin, man?
Well, look, I mean, I there's some of what you're saying that I can understand, Seth, and appreciate the call. You know, I think that there is room to grow for Fields, and Wilson is what he is at this point. That said, I mean, Russell Wilson's averaging more yards per game passing. He's averaging more yards per attempt passing. Each of those guys has played in 10 games, though Fields obviously, some of that coming off the bench. Wilson's numbers have been better, and the offense has scored more points with Wilson running the show. His quarterback rating is better, albeit not by a ton, but it's 4 points plus better than Justin Fields. I don't think Russell Wilson's been a huge problem. Fields obviously has an ability to do things that Russell Wilson can't, but I think what made this team potentially very dangerous was the combination of the two of them. You know, it was Russell Wilson getting you down the field and then Justin Fields coming in to pick up, third downs, to pick up fourth downs, to pick up goal line plays and score touchdowns for you. And Fields did that early in the year. He passed for 5 touchdowns. He ran for 5 touchdowns. He did get hurt after that, and he's dealing with the abdomen injury now, so maybe we've seen him less. To me, if the Steelers are going to make any noise here late after what's turning into a collapse of a season, they got to get Fields back healthy, and they got to use him in some of those short yardage situations, because I like him in that role. I like him in the red zone. And we have seen now Russell Wilson not look particularly good in these last couple of weeks when they get the ball down into scoring territory with a couple of turnovers. The fumble on the long run, the interception in the end zone, whether that's more on him or more on Pickens, that's certainly a debate that can be had. But I like the combination of the two of them together. I just, going forward, when we start talking next year, I don't see how you bring both of those guys back. I don't see how you have the cap space, the money to bring both of those guys back and give you something between the two of them. It just doesn't seem possible to me. Jason, in Carnegie next on The Fan. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how you doing, buddy? Happy holidays.
You too.
Hey, 2 points I want to make. They go hand in hand. One is you look across the league, there's about 10 to 15 receivers that require 10 targets a game. Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, Puka Nacua, and so on and so on. George Pickens fits that mold, and we need to start force-feeding him the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not going to do that, Omar Khan has known since the day that we got rid of Deontay Johnson that we needed a number two receiver.
Right.
Now, the thing is, I hear a lot of blame on Russell Wilson, the offensive coordinator, and even Coach Tomlin. But you can't blame the driver when the pit crew didn't tighten the boots all the way. Omar Khan, I'm blaming for not getting us a number two receiver. He almost had a whole calendar year. I'll hang up and listen to what you got to say.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Jason. You know, I think along those lines, I don't know that it's for a lack of trying for Omar Khan. I mean, look, we know that they were heavily involved with Brandon Ayuk. I mean, that thing came down right to the wire where, from the reports that Jay Glazer had, they were literally on the phone with Omar Khan there in San Francisco finalizing the deal when Brandon Ayuk came in and said, I'm going to sign here. So the Steelers thought they had Ayuk coming. Now, ultimately, that might have not worked out because he blew his knee out. But yeah, he did have a long time. And what they settled on was Mike Williams. They sent a fifth-round pick for Mike Williams. The return has been essentially one game-changing play this year. I mean, without Mike Williams, they probably lose that game to Washington. So, yeah, he has accounted for one win, but ultimately, Pickens goes out and Williams does nothing. He had that touchdown catch against Washington. They win the game. He does not get a single target the next 3 weeks. How the hell do you have a guy brought in at the wide receiver position? We're not talking about, needing to be a rocket scientist to figure it out. You run straight, you run right, you run left, you slant, you hook. You know how to run routes if you're Mike Williams. You've done this long enough. This isn't rocket science. You don't need to have some sort of master class explanation on how to be a wide receiver on a new team in the NFL. I'm not saying there's not an adjustment period, but no targets over the next 3 weeks? I mean, they essentially said, we brought this guy in for a fifth-round pick. He made his one play, but he ain't good enough to get on the field for us. I mean, come on. Where's the trust there? And ultimately, that looks like a bad move now from Omar Khan that he sent a fifth-round pick to a guy that has essentially turned into a receiver who cannot get on the field. I mean, Ben Skowronek's playing more than this guy. It seems like they trust Scotty freaking Miller more than they trust Mike Williams, who's had, multiple thousand-yard seasons and has been, at times, one of the better receivers in the NFL. Maybe the return, once he got here, they were like, oh, you know what? This guy isn't what we thought he was. But then that's on you for poor scouting. And they had tape on the guy. They knew what they were getting. At least they should have. Ed in the truck next on the Fan. What's up, Ed?
Hey, man. Great show as always. You're doing a fine job as a replacement.
Thank you.
I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, it's fine. I'm filling in. Pomp and Joe, they get the holidays roll around. They want to take off, and I get tagged in, and that's fine. You need a good sub
that's
every
cool.
now
yeah,
and then.
Yeah, man. Hey. Yeah, everyone got to work. I'm a glass half full guy. I think we all knew they were going to lose all three of these games, but fortunately, it is what it is.
Yeah.
That's the way that, it came out. If you look at it from a different angle, I don't know if it's good or bad. This is my opinion. What if those three games were spread out of the season? They're still going to lose them. They're not going to beat the Ravens twice. The Ravens are a better team.
Yeah.
And the odds of them beating the Chiefs and the Eagles at home are, slim to none. So
my hope, Ed,
that way now.
My hope, Ed, for these last four games, to be honest with you, was 2-2. You get the Bengals at home. You have these three games.
I agree. I was hoping that too.
My hope was you get two of those. But if you go 0-4 at the end here, I mean, that's just disastrous.
Agree. No, they got to win next week. They got to win next week. And I don't know what the deal is with the dissension in the locker room. Who's at fault or whatever. I have watched some stuff on YouTube with this one gentleman, Max Berry. I don't know if you ever heard of him. Mm-hmm. He said that George Pickens was quitting on multiple routes. It wasn't just one. And, his opinion was that kind of caused that interception. A lot to do with it.
Yeah.
And then I don't know whoever you're talking about defensively. It could be a couple guys. I mean, obviously, in the last few weeks, the middle fielder looks like, I don't know, your kids when they used to play mush ball and pick flowers. The middle field is wide open and no one's paying attention.
Yeah, and there's been and Ed, thanks for the call. To me, there's just been so many blown coverages these last couple of weeks that it's concerning. Blown coverages to tight ends. I mean, A.J. Brown running across the middle of the field, just wide open. You're talking about these crossing routes and these post routes and slant routes, and guys are just open. I mean, they were in that game, kind of clinging to life there, and Patrick Mahomes comes in, and Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes must have said, all right, here's where we kill them. Here's where we just RPO this defense to death. I mean, they gave up, 13 and 21 play drives to the Eagles. They couldn't get off the field defensively, and they just got torn up. And then you come out against the Chiefs 2 weeks later, and it's more of the same. Where it felt like not only were they being outplayed, but they were being out-schemed. It was like Andy Reid said, all right, patient, patient, patient. We're winning. It's close, but we're winning. Boom. Let's hit them with the RPO game. And RPO, 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 right down the field, ball game over, like that. I mean, it was like they were being toyed with. And I've seen a lot of that over the last few years in December football with Mike Tomlin and Terrell Austin's defense, where it's communication, it's execution, it's this, it's that, it's one thing or another, but ultimately it's just not getting stops when they need to. And it's happening a lot. All right, we owe for a break. We'll take more of your calls on the other side, 412-928-9370, and then we'll get to our six-pack around the 12 o'clock hour as well. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. I'm Josh Rountree. I'm in for Pomp and Joe this afternoon on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. 50-minute mark on The Fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. You heard Ray Fittipaldo earlier joining us on the Fan Hotline. That's presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Phone lines have been hot today. I'm Josh Rountree in for Pomp and for Joe. Those guys with the day off. I just texted Joe and I said, I hope you're playing golf. We'll see if I get a response. He might be in the middle of the round of his life. Who knows? Let's go to Greg in Youngstown next on the Fan. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Josh. My big issue with the Steelers is they're kicking this can down the road. I mean, there's a lot of players on defense that are older. We're not good at offensive tackle still. I mean, defensive line is not good. They're going to have to figure something out. Either they're going to go, we're going to have to just rebuild and get better and bite the bullet for 2 years, because you're never going to win 12, 13, 14 games with this, how it's made up right now. Russell Wilson, I don't want him. Let him go. I'd rather play the other guy. I mean, we got to stop this stuff. Kicking the can down the road with guys who never won for us anyway. Let's just start losing a little. Like Moeller said this before. Let's lose a couple seasons. Let's build up this team. Fans are going to have to live with this. You know, I'd rather win 3 and 4 games for the next 2 years and start getting guys in here and building a team again, because this is not working.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a difficult area that they're spinning in right now, Greg, and thanks for the call. I mean, you're talking about a situation where they're good enough to be relevant but not good enough to actually go win anything significant. I mean, that's the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. Good enough to be relevant, not good enough to win at all. Not good enough to be contending. You know, Russell Wilson, I didn't love the move when they brought Russ in. He generally surprised me with how he was able to elevate their offense to another level once he did take over. Like, I thought, for the most part, their offense certainly got better when Russell Wilson became the starting quarterback. I don't know that you can necessarily argue that. I mean, they were really struggling to score points. He comes in against the Jets. They score 37, 26, and 28 points in their next three games. They weren't doing that before. Now, they played the Jets. They suck. They played the Giants, who suck even more. And they had a game against Washington where they looked out of it, and he led them down the field and hit Mike Williams for the game-winning touchdown. And that's I think, their most impressive win of the year at this point. That and the following game when they edged out a win against Baltimore 18-16, but that was more built around what their defense did, and they kicked a bunch of field goals to win that game. I don't know how long Russell Wilson is the answer. I didn't have a problem with him taking over once he took over and they started scoring and scoring touchdowns. I mean, those first three games when they had 37, 26, and 28 points, Russell Wilson had 6 touchdowns and 1 interception. He was playing well. His quarterback rating was terrific. These last 3 weeks, though, 3 touchdowns in the last 3 weeks, 2 interceptions, plus the horrendous fumble inside the 5-yard line, and it hasn't looked quite the same. Now, part of that is the injury to Pickens. Part of that is that their young offensive line has apparently regressed late in the year. But I'm not absolving Russell Wilson of all blame here, because he has certainly not played as well as he could late in the season. Let's go to Jack in Brooklyn on the Fan. What's up, Jack?
So, I was just wondering, what would you consider a successful season this year?
Boy, that's a great question, man. I think coming in, the first thing Steeler fans wanted was a playoff win, right? But is one playoff win at a bad Houston team enough to call it a successful year?
Huh? Fine.
What do you think? If they beat Houston, given how badly this fan base has wanted them to at least win a playoff game, they haven't done that in 7 years. If they beat Houston in the first round of the playoffs, is that a successful season at that point?
I don't know, because Houston's garbage.
That's a good point. Thanks, Jack. Is beating a bad Houston team on the road right now, bad at the moment, is that a successful season if then they go and get stomped in the next round by somebody? If they go and get stomped in the next round by Kansas City, does beating Houston look like a successful year? And why are we at the point right now where for the Pittsburgh Steelers with 6 Lombardi trophies sitting in their offices on display on South Water Street, with right outside of the locker room in big steel letters, it says the standard is the standard. Why are we even discussing winning one playoff game being a successful season? It's because their owner, what was it, last year, 2 years ago, something like that, said any time that you make the playoffs, it's a successful year. I don't think his father would have said that. I don't think many Steeler fans growing up here would necessarily say that one playoff win is a success, and yet here we are debating if them winning a playoff game is considered a step forward, a success. I don't know. It's maybe we have to redefine what the standard is, potentially, because right now the standard seems to be good in the regular season, and then can you maybe win a playoff game? That'll make the fan base happy. You beat a bad Houston team that's riddled with injuries, and then you go to Buffalo or, Kansas City or whoever, and you get worked by the elites. It's tough. John and Gibsonia on the Fan. What's up, John?
What's up, bud? How are you?
Good.
Hey, I was just calling in because I'm as frustrated as most of the callers are with Tomlin. I just, the whole standard is the standard. I get it, and that's the NFL. But it should apply to the coaching staff, too. And I just don't think that when you get out-schemed and you have players that are consistently, the wide receiver room in particular, always giving you challenges, it